Bob K, everybody. Please, Bob, speak whatever you want to say, buddy. Always a pleasure to hear you. You need to unmute as well, my friend.
Is that better? Hello. My name's Bob. I'm an alcoholic. As far as sobriety time, next month I'll have 32 years of sobriety. And the absolute highlight during that 30 years was I went to a Zoom meeting in Cincinnati the first time I heard Penny read the Russell Brand Steps. Can you unfuck yourself, you motherfucker? I mean, it was fantastic. Mark used to talk like that before he got religion, but he's better now. So I want to mention a couple of things. I came to the Tusnua meeting early on, early pandemic, and I'm one of the people that I think I like the Zoom stuff better than live. We just punch a bunch of numbers and go someplace else. And the opportunity to go all over the world, I thought was fabulous. AA is a very, very regional type of thing. And you can go and think this is what AA is like, and you drive 30 miles away and you encounter something quite a bit different. And the opportunity to go around the world is interesting. I went to a meeting in East Kilbride, Scotland, and I'm just outside the East End of Toronto. I got sober in Toronto, East End, and we have a lot of people from Scotland originally. So I go to this meeting in East Kilbride, Scotland, and this is the honest to God truth. The people of that meeting had weaker accents than the people in Toronto from Scotland who've been here for 55 years. So I have no idea how that works. They got to go home at night, practice in front of the mirror or something, make sure they keep their accent up to snuff. I go almost every day to the same restaurant for lunch, and there's an 80-year-old Scottish guy there, and he talks to me. I don't understand a word he says, and he must have been here for 50 goddamn years. So I don't know what that's all about. You Irish guys aren't so bad, and England as well. So just want to talk about this is the part where the speaker says, I really don't like speaking in meetings. I'd rather just sit at the back or make coffee or whatever. And I have to tell you, I used to love it. And when I was new and I couldn't wait for them to ask me, when are they going to get me up there? And, a couple of years sober, we have a big conference in Toronto, 3,300 people average. And I'm going, when are they going to get me up there? Well, probably when they. Not before we get some confidence that you're going to stay sober, because I was not the AA member of the year in 1991 when I came here. But there weren't a lot of choices, and I had screwed around for quite a while, pretending I'm not an alcoholic and doing everything to deny that, and I did not come to AA because I want to quit drinking. I did not want to quit drinking. Life without drinking was unimaginable, even though it was starting to cause me tremendous problems. It's hard being a 40-year-old guy going to a party and you can't talk to people. The young people in my group cannot believe that I was ever shy, and I was shy, especially in certain circumstances, and I hated that about myself. And, when I drink six double vodkas, I'm not shy anymore. And I'm talking to people. And, the unfortunate part is I don't stop there or slow down. I speed up. And then I might be doing something outrageous an hour and a half later. But here's the thing. So, anyway, I'm coming to AA. And, people were nice to me. And, my friends stopped being nice to me. I hung out with guys, you had to buy your rounds. And when I was short of money for that, they don't carry you. They just look at you funny. And you better get some new friends. And by the time I got to AA, I didn't have friends left and very much at all. And anyway, so that was one of the things I liked. In spite of the religiosity, oh, and I have to say something here. My late father, if he was alive today would be his 99th birthday. And he was an AA guy. He got sober in 1961. That's a long time ago. And he loved it. He loved AA. He had a sponsor. Sponsor was a World War I guy. I asked him one time, what happened to his face? Did he fall down when he was drunk or something? He said, no, that's shrapnel from when he was in the trenches in World War I. So this guy lived across the street. He was older than Bill Wilson. And yeah, he died in 1966. He was 15 years sober and he was freaking old. He was older than I am now. So he was older than Bill Wilson. And so this thing doesn't go back an infinite amount of time. My grandfather was older than Bill Wilson. My father came to AA when he was 36 years old. When my grandfather was 36, there was no AA. So we can take it for granted and to talk about being pissed off with it. And, I've studied this stuff a bit, and there was some sobriety going on before AA, but I don't think anything had a terribly high percentage. We are tough patients for the medical people, and we are tough candidates for the religious people. And people would get sober with religion, and then 2 months into it, they go, "I'm not the same as these guys." They're trying to get Dr. Bob sober with the Oxford Group for 2.5 years, and according to him, he got drunk every night. And he knew that alcoholism was more than just sin. And the Oxford Group, those guys, the religious guys, thought it was sin. Repent, you son of a. Anyway, I wish I could swear like Penny. She is fucking awesome. He is my hero. And, I swear quite a bit because young people like it when old people swear. It's just like makes them look cool or something. Yeah. So the 27-year-olds eat it up. They love this shit. But yeah. So I'm coming to AA and I got mixed feelings about it. I don't like the religious stuff, but that's the only choice. I went to the library one time and I figured out I'd be better off if I lived in California, Chicago, or New York. They had some options there, and there was something called SOS. And but all these things have remained relatively small. This secular AA that we have going on right now is doing well. We passed some of these other groups for size and availability. And the pandemic and the internet has been fabulous for us. It's just been fabulous. So, the ability to go to a whole big variety of secular meetings, like I'm on the fringe of a big city. Me and another guy started a secular group 9 years ago, and we got to travel quite a bit to go to the next one. So if you want to go to two meetings a week, you better be prepared to do some driving. And of course, not everybody's got a car, even over here. And so the availability isn't great, but on Zoom, it's fantastic. And I've gone to more meetings in the last 3 years than I have at any time in my sobriety, any time ever. Like I was an early guy. I did a meeting every day, and sometimes I did two. But I never did four or five in one day, and then got up and did three the next day, and three the next day, and just by clicking numbers and going to Colorado and California and different time zones, and it's an amazing thing. And I'm on some Facebook groups, and people go, "Well, I went to the meeting and they did the Lord's Prayer, and I got all pissed off." I go, "Why did you go?" "Oh, well, because you got to go in person." So is it better to go in person and get pissed off, listen to the stuff I don't like, or go on Zoom? I mean, the principal form of communication in AA is verbal. It's what people say. And I can listen to that. I ask the people that hate Zoom, "Do you ever watch television?" "Oh yeah, a lot." "Well, kind of the same." So I haven't got the money to go to Australia, then Europe, and then South America, but I could do all that shit one day in television or watching movies or whatever. So I'm more pro Zoom than most people. Anyway, back to the live thing. Early on, somebody asked me to chair a meeting, and I for me, it was like, Jesus, they want me to be the Prime Minister of Canada. This is fabulous. I'm going to be in charge. And I had bad self-esteem when I got here, and I was one of those bad self-esteem guys that is arrogant as shit and got a big mouth and saying stuff. And but I had low self-esteem, so I would chair a meeting and get self-esteem. And then when I started speaking at meetings, I would get self-esteem. So I'll tell you a speaking at meeting story. East End of Scarborough's, or East End of Toronto's called Scarborough. And I was at this meeting in Scarborough, asked to speak there. And just before the speaker, they gave out chips, and three brand new people got the 24-hour chip. And I was still naive enough to think back then that people getting the desire chip were new. They might have had 47 of those chips in their pocket. That's the reality of our success rate. It's not rare. Rarely do we see a person fail. Open your eyes, you'll see a lot of people fail at this thing. It's not easy, and it's not automatic, and there's no guarantees that I've seen. Anyway, so these guys get up and get the beginner chip, and I'm just. There's something about us, even in the state of being messed up, that we want to help people. I wanted to help these three guys that got up and got the desire chip. So I told them everything I knew about AA and a whole bunch of stuff I didn't know. And I went on for 52 minutes. And in my area, the standard talk is half an hour. They ask you to do half an hour open meeting talk or pitch or whatever we call it. And so 52 minutes, so they didn't ask me back to that group for 19 and a half years, Mark. 19 and a half years. So I have a friend of mine, Wayne, real good AA guy. He wasn't there that night. He worked in a treatment center, and he was on a shift. So I asked him later, I says, Jesus, why did they wait 19 and a half years to have me back to that meeting? He says, well, we had a business meeting right after, and we decided not to have you back until everybody who had been at that meeting that night had died, so they wouldn't have to go through it again. And so the second time, so the second to the, when I spoke there 19 and a half years later, it's actually on a panel, and this good-looking woman was the chairperson. Anyway, after I spoke and after the meeting and the post-meeting thing, she says to me, "Are you single?" And I'm going, man, this was worth 19 and a half years waiting for this. And I have a brain that just goes into high gear when something like that happens. And I'm thinking, she asks how old you are. Just say, is age important? Age isn't important. So anyway, so we're having this conversation. I figure out she's trying to line me up with her mother. So I said, how old's your mother? And she says, oh, well, age isn't really important. I go, what? It is. And it is when it goes the wrong way. But I got asked to speak at a thing. I haven't given any thought since I talked to Mark, but I used to get asked to speak a week ahead, and I'd go into rehearsal, and I couldn't sleep, and 2:30 in the morning, I'm saying this and saying that, trying to rehearse the spiel. And anyway, I get up and do it, and I would always sit down, and I go, I left this out, or I left that out, and I was hard on myself. And I go, oh, you didn't say this. Anyway, once I got sober a long time, I figured out people wish you would have left a lot more stuff out. Like, keep it down to a reasonable length. We don't want to hear you for an hour. I mean, Christ, come to my house at night and talk. If I got insomnia, you can put me to sleep, but not here at the meeting. And Yeah, so anyway, I had these speaker ambitions, and I did a lot of speaking in conventional AA, and they know I'm an atheist. They know I'm an atheist, but I'm not obnoxious about it. And I don't talk about sky daddies, and I try not to use offensive terms. And I just say I am just not in the mainstream of this thing, but I've been able to make it work. And I see some value in the steps, and I don't know if you have to do 12 or 5 or whatever, but I've got a lot out of taking inventory, and I made amends to my ex-wife. I made amends to my parents. There's three people who aren't on the planet anymore, so it's a good thing I didn't dick around with that forever, because those opportunities don't last forever, and I feel good that I did those things, really good that I did those things. And, here in AA, if you want to raise your self-esteem, do esteemable acts or estimable acts, probably more properly. And that's an esteemable act. And, the amends to my parents wasn't a simple apology. In 2003, neither one of them could drive cars anymore, and I had to step in and take them places and doctor's appointments and do their grocery shopping and cook them some meals. And I didn't live with them, but I parented my parents for about 2.5 years, and that's one of the best things I've done in my life. I'm a bit of a scumbag. I'm no Mark, but I'm a bit of a scumbag. And I haven't done a lot of things. I don't do the charity run and get on my bicycle and go 47 kilometers for the Big Brothers organization. And being an Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to help some people. I have the best sponsee relationship with somebody that I've ever had the last 5 or 6 years. And he's a rock and roll musician that was able to get sober in spite of being in the drinking and drugging environment most nights of the week. So it's amazing what's possible here. Kind of when you set your mind to it and do some of the right stuff. But anyway, like a lot of us, he continues to encounter problems. He has a daughter that still won't talk to him, although he's 8 years sober. And then, she makes cracks that gets back to him that, well, I don't really think he's not drinking, and just whatever and tough stuff. I don't care that much about strangers, but what the people I care about think about me, it's hard to put that aside. I'm not a robot, so. We've got some slogans and sayings sometimes that, it's easy to toss out there and it's easy for the other guy. But when it comes down to me, yeah, I can't stop caring what people think to some degree. Try not to be dominated by it. But anyway, what did I want to talk about? I want to talk about the Toronto situation because I was an insider there in 2009, my friend Joe C, who I did not know then, started the first agnostic group in Toronto. And there was no big deal. And it ran for 18 months. They had a link off page off the Toronto website. It was pretty clear that it was an unconventional group. They did not hide that. It was pretty clear that they rated a version of the steps that was not the version that's in the Bigha Bookha. And, anyway, then some people got organized and distressed about it and said, we can't have this. And it was April 2011. They brought a motion to kick the groups out. So the discussion started. It went on about like 90 minutes. And somebody said, we got to carry this over to the next meeting. And the people that with the agenda, they just pushed it. They said, no, we're going to resolve it tonight. They wanted to get those agnostic groups out before the next little booklet was printed where they might be listed. They wanted to get them off. So people said, oh, well, they just listed them. Well, yeah, they took them off the list, but they also took away any rights to vote on any of the affairs of AA that go on in Toronto, like that convention I was talking about and the outreach program to schools and public information, cooperation with the professional community. All those committees are run by Toronto Intergroup, And yeah, those two, and there was two groups by the time they got booted out. So I wasn't at the Toronto meetings. I wasn't at the Toronto meeting where they got kicked out. But 6 months later, they had to wait 6 months. One of the liberal groups said, let's relist these guys. Let's make the motion. Let's talk about this some more. Now they had no problem talking about it for 6 months. It went on for 6 months. And I went to all those meetings. And it was tough because people would get up and make the anti-agnostic, as we called it then, speeches. And, I'm going, these people don't want me here. And if I was a tough guy, I'd be in jail now because I would have punched somebody in the face. It was an ugly, nasty, nasty experience. And anyway, when they finally did the vote, so when they did the first group to kick, when they did the first vote to kick out the groups, the vote was something like 25 to 16 with a couple of abstentions. When they did the vote to relist the groups, it went 61 to 19 against. Where did all those extras? There was like 30 or 35 more groups there. Where did they all come from? They got recruited by the anti-agnostics to come in from the hinterland, and they got people that hadn't been participating for 6 years to come that one night to vote to kick Joe C. Group out and the other group. And by that time there was a third group. They hadn't even been investigated, but they kicked them out because, well, they're affiliated with the other two groups. So anyway, it's interesting how life works. And I wrote an essay one time for the website A Agnostica, which was formed because of to publicize the location and times of the agnostic groups. I mean, if a group got kicked out 30 years ago and got taken off the list and taken off the phone list, you would have no new people coming other than those you were able to personally recruit. And in the modern era, people can punch some buttons and find your stuff pretty fast. And so that was the original purpose of A Agnostica. I just want to add, those people got a little nastier than that. They went up the ladder and sideways to general service and tried to get those groups completely kicked out of A and, not registered at GSO and all that stuff. Anyway, my friend Larry Knight and Joe C. is a placid, gentle type of guy. Roger, who ran the agnostic website, and I were a little more hot-blooded. And we wanted to do something. Larry K wanted to do something, and Joe said, let's negotiate for a while and see where it goes. After about 3 years of negotiation, Toronto Intergroup said, yeah, you guys can come back in as long as you employ as long as you totally cave in on every single element that we asked you to do. Well, no, that's not what we're about. So anyway, Larry K, Larry Knight went out individually, filed a civil rights action, human rights action, we call it here. And anyway, I had a friend that time on the Toronto Intergroup committee, and he said, no, we're not even worried about that. That's not going anywhere. Well, when it finally got to, the preliminary look at it, they said, yeah, your case has merit. Now it's going forward. Now Larry got a free lawyer and whatever, the, somewhat favoring the small guy against the big guy. And Toronto Intergroup found out that they have to obey the law of the land. And this didn't get down to the adjudication case stage, but it was very clear Toronto Intergroup was losing, and GSO pressed them to settle. They said, settle with these guys. So Larry K got some money. Those groups are back doing exactly what they did before. They read, like could be Russell Brand's version of the steps. There's one they wrote themselves about a dozen years ago. There's a pretty good secularized 12-step version. I think they still read that at the online meeting. They rotate and read some of the new ones, Jeffrey Munn, et cetera. And It's worth saying that I try and say this once in a while in meetings. There has never been a better time for atheists and agnostics in AA. We have secular meetings all around the world. We have more than we've ever had. Still don't have them physically in a lot of locations. If you live in Georgia, you're going to have trouble finding a live secular meeting. But you can go online and find access to the same ones I go to. The second thing, the era of self-publishing, as I proved in 2015, any idiot can publish a book. And so there have been a lot of books published. And I'm not one to beat my head against a cement door that is, the GSO, the AA attitude about changing anything. It's not going to happen. The anti-change people have convinced the moderates that once one thing changes, the whole thing's going to fall apart. And that's not what would happen. But I don't waste a lot of time trying to lobby for big changes to go on in Alcoholics Anonymous official ones. And I'm content with the unofficial ones. Russell Brand's book, and there's a bunch of others, and there was several before that. And if I pick up one and I don't like it that much, pop for $12 and get another one, and or get a sponsor and get him to buy you one. That's always good at conning sponsors. I used to be good at that. I'd phone my sponsor up once in a while and ask him a question just to make him feel good. Hang up the phone, go, "I'm not going to do what he said, but he'll feel better now." Oh, yeah. As I said, I wasn't the candidate of the year in 1991. Anyway, things got a lot better for me as a result of being sober. I don't deny that. I don't have a big problem with AA. I think AA has some absolutely sharp, sharp psychological ideas hidden under the religious language. The 10th step, I'm the type of explosive person. I can get mad at in arguments with my own friends. And, the take the 10th step and go make up with somebody and say, "Geez, I was wrong the other day. I was in a bad mood. Sorry." How do you argue against doing that? People that never do that, I don't want to be around them that much. People that are right and got to stay right. And I can be like that. That's kind of my default position. But, just backtracking, the amends I made, and I made some other ones, and I paid back some money I owed. And but people say, "Well, I'll just do the living amends and act differently." Some of the people that I offended, they got value out of me hearing me own it and me saying, "Yeah, I was wrong about that, and I feel bad about that," instead of just, "Oh, I'm not going to do that to them anymore." And maybe they got to carry a resentment now. I know something about carrying resentments. I'm pretty good at it. But anyway, since the 52-minute thing, where they didn't have me back for 19 and a half years, if you guys decide not to have me back in 19, for 19 and a half years, that's going to be a problem because I ain't going to be around that long. And so I'm going to shut it off and say that I was pleased to be here. And I'm going to continue to go to the Cincinnati meeting and hope they ask Penny to say fuck about 14 times because I love that. I don't have a lot of excitement going on in my life. Oh, I do. So let me do the pimping a little bit. So in 2015, I wrote a book called Key Players in AA History. And for that type of specialty book, it's been a reasonable seller. What I take pride in, there's two atheists that I know of that have written history books about AA. One is Bob Kennedy, and the other one is Jim Burwell. Jim Burwell wrote a book called The Evolution of Alcoholics Anonymous. Got all kinds of mistakes in it, probably because he tells a story. He blacked out almost every time he drank. And that's shocking for even for most alcoholics to hear. Yeah, so he had some memory issues. But so there's a history group in London, England. The Shaberg book was mentioned before, and I would encourage anybody who hasn't seen William Shaberg make a presentation, try to take that in on the weekend of the 7th and 8th. He is a marvelous presenter. He's going to turn 80 in a week or so, and he's just got a lot of enthusiasm. His book is brilliant. It's deeply researched. Some of the fundamentalists hated it when it came out, but the research is so diligent, it's hard to argue with. Here's the facts. You go read all those letters in the archives, see what your conclusion is. And it was just like we knew already in the history community, Bill Wilson's a big exaggerator. Anyway, there's a group from London, England called Growing an Understanding Group. And there's different stuff of these. So another thing about the internet, there's some interesting meetings. I go to three different history meetings a week, AA history meetings, and that's resuscitated my interest because when you've been to a lot of these meetings, it kind of gets boring after a while sometimes. And I've been a bit of a stage of that right now. I think I overdosed on meetings there for a while. Go, oh, is he going to say that again? And why is that guy going on for 8 minutes? And so the bad aspects of the personality don't go away. Poof, poof, magically gone. That'd be kind of cool if that happened. Oh, look at Bob Kennedy. He used to be impatient. Now he's just. He's like a Zen master, that guy, just so mellow. And that would be nice. People around me would like that, I think, but they're not going to get it. Right, Penny? Fuck 'em. And yeah, exactly. So anyway, the London group is going to do a read through of my book like they did with Shaberg for three times. And they're gonna like read a chapter, two chapters a week, and I'll be there for question and answer. And anyway, for an old, like I used to chase women and get drunk and do exciting stuff. And this is as good as it gets at 73 years old. You're reading your book. I tell my brother, I'm trying to be famous in the anonymous thingy. Trying to be famous, the anonymous thingy. So anyway, I like secular AA. I think AA in general is good if we change it a bit. And I love what Joe C. says. If you need to change a word, change the word. The word won't mind. And, brilliant guy. Shaberg said the other day, we were talking about Joe C. and how smart he is. And when I first met him, I thought, what a nice guy, but not very bright. And why I thought he was not very bright, he's not an egomaniac. He's not jumping up and down like me, trying to use a five-syllable word he looked up in the dictionary last night. And he's also a divergent thinker. He thinks in an odd way about certain things. And, sometimes you can think, oh, he's not that swift, but really, he's very swift. One of the people I like. And I learned a long time ago, you can learn from the people that are doing it right, and you can learn from the people that are doing it wrong. And Joe C's a bit of a role model for me. He's no Penny, but he ain't bad. So that's it for me, Mark. Thank you.